What message lies at the heart of the Isle of Man government? Is it a tax and spend government, spending all our hard-earned savings? Or is it a government that takes a more cautious approach to spending and sees income growth as a product of a growing economy? Government's Our Island plan had some bold ambition, but is it being delivered? There's one man who should know the answer to these questions, and that's Chief Minister Alf Cannon. I caught up with him last week and we began by discussing the government's forthcoming roadshows.
Well, I think it is important that we do have a programme of public engagement. This was a commitment that we made last year. I think it proved to be a successful commitment. There was some good exchanges of views. There was some very useful personal interactions with members of the public outside our normal constituency basis and outside of the normal forums in which we operate. And from my own perspective, and one of the reasons why I came up with this idea was to make sure that council did have that real-time exposure, if you like, as a group to public sentiment and public views. And, you know, of course, we will be going through that same process next week, and while they come, you'll be, if you're broadcasting this on Sunday, it will in fact be on the Monday, where we'll be in Ramsey Grammar School.
You had a question in relation to what the impact of these roadshows were. What's your view as to how these roadshows work and how people's feedback influence what you do?
Well, absolutely, there's an element of specific factual information that is imparted. There's obviously also an element of sentiment that is expressed. So, you know, I think I reeled off a whole raft of facts to Laurie Hooper about things that had changed as a result of those roadshows. And, you know, we can look at, for example, steam packet fares, cost of travel, which was one area. And, you know, the roadshows took place sort of spring last year, and in September the steam packet were announcing changes to fares, which you know, saw reductions in terms of the standard fare price, free travel for children, an equalisation in terms of some aspects of freight travel. So that's one classic example. I think one of the aspects that was bubbling over a lot at the last roadshows were fundamental structural issues within the hospitality sector at the time, and we took immediate action actually after those roadshows in terms of providing some support for the hospitality sector. Healthcare clearly was a major issue at the last roadshow, and you know, we've taken steps to make sure that we are getting healthcare spending under control, but also trying to get healthcare delivered more in the community so that we can get more access to, say, for example, GP appointments. Immigration was one of the core issues that was raised with us. You know, in the in July Tynwald, we'll be bringing forward those proposals for a new higher immigration status in terms of the wages that will be paid to applicants and immigrants coming across to the Isle of Man from outside of the common travel area. Even security was an issue that was raised with us. We've taken a lot of investment into security now in terms of policing. There's 17 new police constables just being signed up to join police force. We've integrated ports and policing, ticket port security and policing together. So we're taking that matter very seriously. And there were other subjects, of course, that were raised with us, where I can demonstrate there has been action housing, for example. And I know that David Ashford, chair of the Housing Communities Board, this week has been on telling everybody actually that we have pushed affordable housing levels up in this administration. We've already built more affordable housing than during the entire lifetime of the last administration, and we've got 100 or so affordable houses to come in the next 12 months. And of course, we've got plenty of evidence of the supply of housing that we've been building in the private sector. So there's a raft of stuff that happened last year that gave us significant food for thought. And of course, the other aspect of these roadshows is for an exchange of views and for ministers to be able to, under questioning, put forward the views of council or their views as to the policy direction and area that is being followed.
What you get every 5 years is an opportunity to find out in great depth what the public think. Certainly, in my experience, canvassing is one of the most rewarding and most informative thing that any politician can ever do. When you're first elected, you're pretty much in touch with where the people are. The further you drift through your 5 year term is the more detached, I guess, you become. So these sorts of roadshows where you at least get a snapshot of public opinion, they'll help you as council ministers, I guess, just the way in which you think about the political issues of the day. You then have that remembering of, well, actually, this is what the people have just told us in these roadshows.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, and yes, the longer administration goes on, then arguably the harder it is to make those sorts of changes in a short period of time. And, you know, some policies do take a matter of months, if not years, to actually come through to fruition. So, for example, the Brownfield site, where we committed to making progress, and I think we can demonstrate, say that through the Manx Development Corporation, but also through the Island Infrastructure Scheme, which has been in operation now almost since the beginning of this administration. But we are starting to see some of that building now coming through. Yes, the MDC did finish the Westmoreland Road Nurses Home. They've clearly got further work to do up in that area. But we are making progress in a number of those areas. And from an economic perspective, you know, the general evidence is that, you know, despite quite a few pressures that are coming through, we've met our targets in terms of net positive inward migration. We have a stronger workforce than we did 4 years ago. And that has proved positive for us, and will help us economically, you know, move forward. Accepting, of course, there's always going to be now challenges and issues and real life experience that is now going to be raised with us over the next week, which we absolutely need to consider to factor into our, you know, our thinking. And you can make short term changes, for example, in some areas, for example, steam packet, you know, fares, for example, dealing with the immediacy of a structural short-term problem in a particular sector. But also, you know, one needs to then bear in mind both sentiment, reality, actual views for direction of travel versus obviously some of the other factors that government will be dealing with politically and in reality as well. So not everything that's said to us will result in action, but this is a chance for us to get out from beyond what might be regarded as normal comfort zones and talk to people in different environments. And as I say, to hopefully learn and understand more about what impact is going on sort of effectively outside of our normal sort of discussions and even just outside of our constituencies.
Anyone who's listening then, if they're pondering, should I bother going to this roadshow or not? What is in store for them if they go, and where and when can they go?
On Monday, 30th of June, we will be in Ramsey at Ramsey Grammar School. On Tuesday, we will be in Douglas. On Wednesday, we will be down at Castle Rush, and on Thursday, we will be in the West at in Peel. Every day we will make it clear exactly where that location is, and I would say to anybody who wants to come along, you know, you can register for that event. And again, those registration details on Eventbrite are I hope fairly visible. And look, you know, if you just want to come along in the evening, please come along. And there's obviously a slight risk that we will be at capacity, but you know, as it stands, you know, there is room to welcome people on the night at these events.
Is this an opportunity for one-to-ones with ministers, or is it a big kind of bun fight type political meeting?
No, absolutely. There is absolute chance for the first half of the meeting, for the first 45 minutes, hour or so, to be able to talk to ministers on a one-to-one basis, in a more relaxed way. And I hope to exchange those views over a fairly short period of time, but nevertheless still on a one-to-one basis. You know, and then we'll move to a more traditional question and answer session.
There's no doubt that Council of Ministers is doing at least what is necessary and possibly going slightly over in terms of actually getting out there and understanding what people want. How good do you think Council of Ministers is in retaining, placing in the public mind might be a better way of putting it, what it is that you are about as a government? What is your mission? What are you trying to achieve? So what is the story of the Isle of Man government?
It is a government that has taken the island forward through, you know, a period of great change and a period in which there has been a great deal of international uncertainty. And, you know, we started off with a vision to build the island and to put the platform down for the future, dealing with the big issues that we were facing, particularly around the island's demographic issues. As I said, an island and a government, therefore, that was going to put in place the foundations for us to be able to move forward and build our island with a younger working population to fill the skills gaps, by filling the skills gaps that we had and by driving forward the economy, creating new jobs, giving opportunities for business. You know, and around that, of course, then tackling and building the public services, the infrastructure that we were going to need, you know, to move forward. And I think alongside that, Phil, the uniqueness, I guess, of the challenges of the last 4 years, to put into context, particularly are focused around energy transition, future energy provision in particular, and also, I guess, the economic circumstances outside of this island, which have proven to be, you know, incredibly challenging. And now, of course, you know, we are seeing this AI revolution coming forward, you know, at pace, perhaps yet to see the impacts of that. But as a government, we've also now got to get on top of that. So I, you know, feel that actually when we started off with the low figures that we had from an economic perspective, the numbers of people out of work, the numbers of people we needed to get into work, we've increased the numbers of people in work, we've increased median earnings, tax receipts are up and performing better than what they were. We've exceeded I think the expectations when it came to things like affordable housing. And I can talk to you just earlier about how we've exceeded the last administration's totals, and we're continuing to move forward in terms of that program. How we have, you know, continued to try and push forward with the energy program that we will need to try and develop in years to come. And of course, alongside that, we have achieved aspects in terms of improvements, for example, in education, where we have put in a new performance criteria for our schools. So we're able to now start to see, and we're going to build that and improve it. But now the foundation is there, and we haven't had that measurement for a long, long time. And of course, in central government itself, where the issue and size of government still arguably remains an issue, but putting in place reforms now and the opportunity for greater efficiencies through, for example, the Operations Performance Board, which we have done now effectively, I would argue, by bringing in the private sector experience to help guide and oversee some of the public sector delivery.
Well, you mentioned there the private sector experience. I mean, what sorts of things have they picked up? Any examples that you can give as to how that experience is helping?
So I've committed to a £50 million efficiency programme to drive forward further efficiencies over the next 5 years. Much of the guidance in terms of putting in the foundations of that, how that is going to be delivered and successfully measured is absolutely critical. And we need to see the results of that in terms of clear evidence that the financial resources have been freed up. You know, and alongside that, we need to clearly demonstrate where that extra money has either been invested or how it has been used to further sort of increase the efficiency of government, and of course whether government has effectively downsized alongside it, because the point about digitalization and much of this efficiency program is around digitalization, whether that's the income tax digital framework, the access that you have to pay things like your driving license or your car tax renewals. All these types of programs are starting to take place and take shape. And the theory, of course, behind it is that it will give you as the consumer, as the customer, better access to the service that you want. And of course, that service is being delivered at a lower cost. I think the next stage of this, once we have more sight in terms of the program delivery, will be to be able to say, actually, the target size of government is now, you know, 200, 300, 400 people less than where it was in when we began this program effectively, which was in 2024. So there is a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes in that respect.
And that is encouraging, because the front of house side of things is less obvious. So anyone who has an interest in Tynwald, in the House of Keys, LegCo, will have noted that, for example, I think there's only 11 bills that have been completed so far. I mean, we're almost 4 years through, so there's only an opportunity for one more year's worth of legislation. 11 bills complete, 5 underway but not completed. You would think that, particularly looking at our island plan and seeing the bold vision that was in that plan, that there would be legislative change backing that up and absolute clarity that this government was going to change the rules, it was going to make things different. What's the reason, I suppose, for the lack of focus, what appears to be a lack of focus on the legislative programme?
Well, I think the legislative programme has been very much dominated by a raft of primary legislation that has been sort of predetermined for us, of which there's been a lot of secondary legislation brought for. But look, you know, I don't think you should necessarily judge the success of the government by numbers of pieces of paper that have been delivered, because, you know, we have had significant areas to tackle that don't necessarily predicate themselves on pieces of legislation. So particularly, let's say, getting on top of healthcare expenditure, healthcare governance, healthcare delivery does not predicate it itself necessarily just on pieces of legislation. Bringing forward the reform in terms of education, in terms of school inspections and how that was to be undertaken, doesn't necessarily need a piece of legislation to do that. It doesn't need a piece of legislation to drive forward efficiencies in government and improving governance. Does not need legislation. We have, of course, documented a lot of this, and some of it has indeed fallen into various codes and guidance, etc. For example, the capability of departments to bring in non-executive directors to help them get that sort of private-public partnership working together, if you like. So actually, you know, the government can clearly demonstrate how it has made improvements, how we have improved the economy, how we have improved lives, how we have built more houses, how we have sought to get healthcare under control and move it forward without necessarily bringing forward legislation. There is legislation, of course, coming through in quite big streams. So, for example, the Marine Infrastructure Management Act has taken up a huge amount of officer time in terms of getting the technicalities of that right. We need that legislation in place for the future. It's not materially impacting today or tomorrow, but we've had to invest a lot of money making sure that we're ready to go with offshore infrastructure should we come to realise the capabilities that we have for renewable energy offshore. So that's another reason why, because, you know, we've been working on quite heavy and detailed legislation, both in that respect, in education and in healthcare, that has taken a lot of time and is taking a lot of time to develop.
But I mean, that example is probably not the best of examples, because I remember saying something remarkably similar to what you've just said when I was infrastructure minister back in 2015-16. And at that stage, we had a programme to start working on that legislation. We're 10 years on now, and it's only just starting to come through. I mean, that's an incredibly slow pace of change, isn't it?
I think that, we're moving slightly more into that context of energy now. But I think that's symptomatic of the challenges that we have faced in terms of realising our capabilities to deliver energy, both offshore, and indeed onshore. So I think that actually, 10 years is a long time. Over 10 years since we licensed offshore, and we're still theoretically coming towards potentially a planning application. And look, not only have we got legislation to get through to enable things to happen should planning applications be successful, but we've also got barriers to overcome in terms of grid connections, access to effectively the UK grid, and CFD rounds, i.e. the rounds that they offer for connections and supplies to come on grid. So actually, I think, it's an issue worth highlighting. Yes, it is taking a long time, but this is, as a whole, the energy development is simple to talk about, but in practice is proving much harder to deliver. And of course, that went on to the fact that, we're putting this energy report before, or energy update before Tim Ward in July. And I think we're being very honest with Tim Ward and with the public that targets that were given to the government around energy, electricity decarbonisation in particular, are now seriously in doubt. And
because you were supposed to have something like 30 megawatts of generation capacity in place effectively before the next election, and that's just not going to happen, is it?
Well, that's absolutely not going to happen. I think the realities of that now are pretty clear. I mean, the process around planning, the legitimate process that interested parties want to go through, of course, and the legal process, the lawful process that the MUA need to go through in terms of delivering this, is clearly taking much longer. And of course, the brutal truth is, there are much other greater technicalities also behind the scenes. Even if this does get approved, transporting infrastructure across to the Isle of Man is an issue, and not least getting in the order queue to get this, these infrastructure, the turbines manufactured, is also another critical matter that is not always, as simple as it might seem, given a lot of competing demands. And of course, when we're talking about energy from an Isle of Man perspective, you've also got quite a change of emphasis going on around us. Yes, on one hand, people pushing forward with renewable energy, and on the other hand, drill baby drill, new president of the United States, who's somewhat set a different tone from that respect. Countries like New Zealand, for example, reopening up access to oil and gas. The UK, it seems, changing its mind slightly about what's happening in, the North Sea. I think we need to cut through that and retain a sense of pragmatism from an Isle of Man perspective. I think we need to be now realistic with ourselves that gas will remain a transition fuel for us from far longer than some people would have ideally wanted. We need to prepare for that. But we also, as a government, need to continue to find ways to realise the potential of renewable energy and add that to our capabilities for longer term security.
Do you think Tynwald members, your ministers, I suppose, in particular, and yourself, have a strong enough sense of purpose? Because it does feel like the timescales that change takes are far greater than perhaps they would be if there were ministers with very, very clear sense of purpose and vision all signed up to the Our Island plan, which was the government plan back, produced, I think it was 3 years ago, it was finally ratified. There were lots of quite bold ambition in that plan. It doesn't feel as though the progress is eye-catching. In fact, if anything, it's quite the opposite of eye-catching. It's a kind of a general sort of shuffle forward rather than bold strides.
I think, you know, fundamentally, I would say to you that we have delivered on a lot of the key underpinning measures of Our Island plan in terms of taking us forward. But we've also dealt with a lot of headwinds along the way, and we've discussed some of those headwinds, and those headwinds have had impact on a real basis on our island, and whether that has been, you know, the impacts of inflation, the cost of living, the change and transitions that we've been going through from a technology basis, the headwinds that are potentially coming down the line now economically, and you know, without getting into sort of levels of detail that will have people turning the radio off, but you know, global taxation levels, AI developments, which is positive but also could be challenging in terms of jobs and job infrastructure, the rising cost of healthcare and dealing both with that but also getting in the investment necessary to help that change and transition. So it's to, for example, get healthcare back out into the community and get healthcare closer to people's homes. So actually there has been a lot of transitional work that we have undertaken. I think the island can be proud of the progress that it's made. We're certainly not in that 2016 position where we were net negative migration and people were leaving the island. And I want to think that actually when you put into context the positions, you know, the benchmarks all around us, you know, the island retains, you know, a strong position. We are working, and we've got to work incredibly hard to continue to take us forward positively. And of course, we've got to build on, you know, some of those issues, for example, that were raised very much at our last public roadshows. That's why this year we have focused on the economy. We have focused on immigration. We're raising up the minimum levels of wages to prevent low-cost, you know, low-paid immigrants coming across into society, possibly causing structural problems for us. We're talking very much about security on our island. We've invested in our police force, we've strengthened their capabilities, and we're taking that incredibly seriously. The island's going to be a very safe place to live in a very uncertain world at the moment. We're continuing to invest in our long-term energy security, but we've got complete energy security at the moment in terms of our capabilities to deliver gas. So there's actually a lot of positives that I can give you that a lot of other countries will be finding as negatives. But Phil,
and I suppose the problem though is you've trotted those out now, that the message, you know, because I did ask you earlier about the story of the Isle of Man government, and I guess I got the whole story rather than the synopsis on the back cover. I'm not sure that people really get what it is that this government's about, what that core message is, what the, you know, what the actual progress is, what the general direction of travel is. And perhaps that's because of the inevitable nature of a government made up in the way that our government is. We don't have party politics. It has to be a pragmatic, collective way forward. But it just feels as though, you know, likes of the great sort of orators in politics, they've got their tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime, education, it's the economy, stupid, these sorts of things. You knew exactly where those political leaders stand. I'm not sure we get that from the Isle of Man government.
I don't think we've been about buzzwords at all, Phil. You know, there hasn't been, you know, yes, absolutely, at the heart of everything is the economy, you know, because without a strong economy, we are not going to have the money that we need to invest in all the the other core aspects of public service delivery that we've mentioned during this interview, and we were very clear about how we were going to address some of the problems in the economy, effectively undertake that economic recovery piece, which was so desperate after a very damaging 2 years of COVID. We set that out clearly in the Ireland plan, and we've delivered on it. No question. I think, you know, when you, in any other normal period of time, we will probably be celebrating that to a large degree. The bottom line is, you know, the realities, the harsh realities of government mean that we are tackling a whole number of other issues which are challenging us, of course, which your plans don't necessarily factor in. And, you know, we talked about those key and critical issues. But the important thing is that I can safely stand up next week and say, you told us about security on the island and immigration last year, and we've tackled it and we've dealt with it and we've improved the situation and we've invested resources in it. You told us about your concerns about the government's spending, and I can demonstrate how we are tackling that and the fiscal discipline and the measures that we're employing. You've told us about your concern about the size of the public sector, and I can talk about the efficiencies program, and I can demonstrate the progress that we have made more broadly in a number of areas, including, for example, housing. That doesn't, and look, as an island, I think we should celebrate the successes that we have made in those areas, except there is a huge amount of work to do. And also accept that, you know, we have to keep working to push things forward, whether that is new digital strategies, investment in AI, moving faster and quicker with the efficiency program, or actually, you know, determining more quickly how healthcare needs to change. But, you know, this is a very challenging environment in which we're operating, whether that's development of technologies, whether it's development of AI, whether it is energy connecting to grids, the investment needed, whether it is private sector coming through with new ideas. And I think sometimes we have to be very pragmatic. You know, I think we're not just sticking our money on one horse, particularly the easiest analogy for that is in energy, and we are having to consider whether or not simply laying a new interconnector and plugging into the UK grid is actually the most cost effective and sensible way to deal with new developments in energy which are taking place around us. So I would say to you, this is a pragmatic government, this is a hard working government. It's not all been about fancy headlines, but the environment around us has never really been particularly geared up to deliver those. But the underlying evidence will be that we have succeeded in delivering what we set out to do in a number of different ways.
Is Tynwald more divided now than you have seen in previous Tynwalds? It certainly appears that there are quite clear factions in Tynwald, and they don't seem to mix particularly well. There's no, I mean, you talk there of pragmatism, but pragmatism doesn't seem to cut it when it comes to the different factions in Tynwald. There's this is my way, and that's the other person's way, and there's no meeting in the middle. Is that fair?
Well, I'll try not to stray too much into you know, the parliamentary business. You know, I think,
but it's relevant for how you deliver as a government.
It is, absolutely. Look, you know, and my job as chief minister is to try and bring some sense to many different perspectives and different points on that political spectrum, and to particularly around the council of ministers table, try and find the unified way forward. That has been our political structure for a number of decades now, and, you know, probably no different to the chief ministers that have gone before me, although arguably some of the breadth of political views and the positioning on that spectrum is in some areas, you know, as wide as it's been possibly, you know, in my experience, certainly over the last 15 years. But nevertheless, you have to bring that together. There has to be a sense of pragmatism, I think, from all parties, you know, if they are in that understanding that that have to be collegiate to take the island forward. And look, I think it's all politicians, in my experience, do want to see, you know, progress. But yes, absolutely. Of course, there are, you know, outside the, you know, the council of ministers, there are clearly frustrations and people pulling in different directions. And I think inside the council of ministers, we are maintaining a committed approach to you know, pushing the island forward. You know, and everybody has to have a bit of give and take and understanding of what is necessary in order to provide a cohesive government that is moving forwards. But absolutely, you know, there are a lot of differing views and that can create some friction and some tension. But, you know, as I say, we're all committed to moving forward and we do so. And I've always been very honest with people that, you know, we should have robust discussions in the council of ministers particularly, but we do need to get a position that we can unite behind, you know, and move forward on. And of course, you know, we had a question actually on collective responsibility in the House of Keys on Tuesday. Absolutely. You know, the rules apply. If you don't agree with the position and you either object so much that it's beyond, you know, your capacity to stay in the bounds of collective responsibility, then there is a route, of course. But that route means that you need to offer your resignation and go and fight that particular cause in your own way, which people are perfectly entitled to do. So
we are effectively 3 years into the Our Island plan because, of course, it took the best part of a year to develop that. And that was partly because of the fact that you have a disparate range of views in Tynwald, and getting all those views together and creating a plan that everyone can get behind is, you know, it's a lengthy process. But I guess, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I guess that when that plan was produced, you might have hoped that by the time we get into election year, more progress would have been made on the core issues.
I mean, we will see where we are in 12 months. As I said to you, look, I think in a number of areas, if you go and look at it, we will have hit much of that headline data that we were looking to achieve. And I think we will be able to demonstrate that, and I hope be able to hold our heads up and say that we have taken the economy forward in a number of different areas. But also, and more importantly, we have been capable of dealing with the issues that have come upon us, as they will any government, whether that's pandemics, financial crises, transport issues, you know, general economic performance issues that you may not have otherwise been able to have planned for. And I firmly believe that each issue that has come to us, you know, outside of plans and all the rest of it, we have tackled, we've reacted to, we've responded to, and we found a way through. And that, I think, is evidence of a government that is capable of positive thinking, that is capable of working together, and is capable of finding solutions. And you know, I was very much involved with a government at the time, just prior to this one, of course, in facing up to that kind of challenge. And I can tell you, you know, our reaction to dealing with the economic crisis at that particular time demonstrated the capacity, my capacity, people, the capacity of Treasury, of DfE, of people around us to work together and deliver the solutions we needed at the time. You know, and I think that we should take comfort from the fact that we are capable of delivering that outside of just the standard plan that we all produce from whatever sphere of life we have, whether the public or the private sector.
Does it help or hinder that so much of the high-level experience that you had in terms of senior officers in government when you began your administration is no longer with you?
Look, I mean, you know, everybody wants change, don't they? And we decided to make some changes, and we were part of a transitioning period of time where we were coming out of COVID. There were our own crises to deal with, whether that employment tribunals or operationally. And we, you know, there were officers who were naturally coming to the end of their service. I think the important thing from an executive perspective is to make sure you've got in place those sort of core frameworks, which will inevitably mean that whoever comes and goes, there is still that essence of knowledge and planning that has continuity. So whether that means implementing the right training and development of those sitting behind, you know, senior officers, or in our case, and I think on our main, you know, very pleased that we've done this, you know, an operations performance board now that will stay, I hope, in perpetuity, that has that private public partnership element in terms of the experience that we have brought in from outside to support, but also effectively to guide senior officers. So absolutely, you know, I think it's, We continue to move forward, and personnel change as they do politically, and they do at executive level. But I don't think that has not been a hindrance. Sometimes you need to move forward, and to do that, you need to make changes, but positive changes nonetheless.
Your newest, or one of your newest ministers, has cut a somewhat beleaguered figure in recent weeks. Michelle Hayward, obviously a DOI. How does that role between yourself as Chief Minister and any minister, but particularly new ministers who perhaps haven't got the same level of ministerial experience, how do you work with those ministers to work through some of the issues, for example, the public issue at the moment in relation to the 20 miles an hour speed limit, under which the minister's taken quite a lot of flack. I mean, how do you work with a minister to help them through those sorts of situations?
Well, you know, every minister obviously is different in terms of their own beliefs and how they want to take forward and put their mark on their particular role. I'm always open to talking to ministers and to try and offer my perspective in terms of where there are areas that I can contribute in terms of my experience, but also how to try and, you know, ensure that they are incorporating the broader views of the Council of Ministers. Look, we had a debate in House of Keys literally yesterday on Tuesday regarding 20 mile an hour zones. I know it's been hugely controversial. I know that there has been a lot of flak directed at the minister. I think I was clear in terms of being able to put forward a point and perspective that this was not on my agenda, on the Council of Ministers' agenda, or in terms of our island plan. But effectively, again, this has been something that Tynwald effectively had determined to sort of take forward almost in their own right, and clearly now it has become a requirement of Tynwald that government roll this out. Look, you know, I've been speaking to the minister. She knows, and I know there is a huge amount of public objection, but also some degree of public misconception in that this is some form of all island 20 mile an hour policy. It's absolutely not. You know, and I've been trying to work with the minister to help understand how we can better explain the position, but also go about this in a sensitive and proper and considerate manner where it can be demonstrably seen that we're working with local communities rather than forcing local communities to have something imposed on them that they don't otherwise want. This is very much restricted to residential areas. And I know that the minister, there have been clearly some issues at the start of this. You know, the minister's got a grip of this now. You know, I believe there's no more poles will be installed until absolutely final decisions have been made. You know, the minister's committed to extensive consultations. He's even committed to coming back after consultation to local authorities, to MHKs, to highlight those impacted roads. And I hope that we can get through this now as efficiently, effectively, and as considerately as possible, so that we can move on. Because, and brutally, Phil, on the great scheme of issues that this government is tackling and dealing with, this is not one really that is going to be in the top five or even the top 10. You know, we are facing and set out our fundamentals, you know, around sort of economic delivery, healthcare, education, etc. You know, but we will deal with this as considerately as possible, and then, you know, seek to move on.
And of course, when you say it's not in the top 10, it may not be something you want to be in the top 10 in terms of government priorities. But I guess, I'm no fortune teller, but I can't imagine your roadshows are not going to have quite a significant element of 20 miles per hour speed limits.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, because it's become a very important public issue. So I'm not discounting that. I mean, I think I was just trying to put it into context in terms of, you know, where otherwise this would have sat. And I you know, clearly, as I said, you know, there's been a huge amount of public concern, and rightly we will have to deal with that and to, you know, talk to people and on a one-to-one basis, but also, you know, publicly as well. But as I said, I've just tried to put this into context in terms of where we came from originally from this. Absolutely, were we interested in local community areas and space and making places more habitable and improving green spaces and people's lifestyles. But of course, the sort of blanket approach to this, which sort of came through eventually, was probably not in the great spirit of how it was intended. And as I said, we need to move this forward because I have to accept that it has a democratic mandate effectively behind it, you know, through Tynwald representation and through Tynwald voting. We need to deal with it considerately now. And we really do need to demonstrate that when going out to different communities, we are cooperating and listening to that community feedback and dealing with matters considerately.
We're almost at the end of the programme now. We've just got about a minute left. What's your ambition for the next 12 months? What are you hoping to achieve?
Very much, you know, the economy now is going to be front and centre of a lot of our thinking and I hope delivery. You know, we have got a busy 12 months in front of us in that respect, not least because in 15 months' time or so, the island's going to be under international scrutiny with a MoneyVal, a European inspection effectively through this MoneyVal organisation. You know, and they will have the power to determine somewhat, you know, how we progress the economy in the future. In other words, we need to get through that and we need to be given a clean bill of health. And that's why we're investing significant sums now in ensuring that we have tackled some of the issues that we can see coming through from financial crime aspect, making sure that, of course, our regulation is up to speed, but also helping the private sector, you know, move forward. And alongside that, you know, getting ourselves, I think, into a clearer position where we can actually properly see things like our AI strategies and our digital strategies coming forward with greater clarity about how they will help improve, you know, the economy, business confidence, but also our sort of our sort of economic infrastructure on the island, and, you know, I would like to see, you know, in 12 months' time, a clear demonstration about how we've got on top of healthcare funding, but also within the budgets that we've got, made further progress in terms of delivering care in the community, giving people more access to GPs and medical treatment, and relieving some of the strains that we've had in the hospital, alongside the other issues that I've clearly set out in terms of security, immigration, and education. But I'm going to really, I hope, you know, put the economy front and centre of the next 12 months as we push forward. And I want to get to the end of next year with a sense of confidence in the island's future, but also a belief that people are making progress in their own lives.
That was Eyre and Michael, MHK Chief Minister Alf Cannon. So what do you think? Do you know what government's ambition is? I'm Phil Gorn, the Ramayus and Geisha from. Thanks for listening.